This Tommy Sampson band based in Edinburgh was clearly hot stuff, and indeed it had that reputation in Scotland. Recordings of it in action, whether official or unofficial, are very rare, but this old acetate does give an impression of the smooth power the band commanded. I may be wrong by the Tommy Sampson Orchestra. Tommy Sampson is still around, and I wondered how he felt about losing so many prime musicians to Ted Heath.
All the people are saying that Ted Heath pinched all the people from Tommy's. He didn't. Three or four, which happens, and Ken will tell you, how many people have you had taken away from you, Ken, for other things? It happens all the time, doesn't it?
Of course, yes. It used to sicken me very much.
The very diplomatic Tommy Sampson, with Ken McIntosh, and at least one of the best replacement players, came from Ken's band, as Duncan Campbell and his fellow trumpeters were keen to point out.
I think you'll agree with me, the best capture of all, you know what I'm going to say.
Is you?
From Ken McIntosh band.
Bobby Pratt, the best ever.
Yeah.
Well, he was the band,
wasn't he? What a capture that was.
Yeah.
He was a band on his own, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Bobby Pratt was a trumpet player with the range and endurance that every band leader knows is a gift from heaven. On his guide to the instruments of the dance orchestra, Ted used him to demonstrate the instrument, first in the normal range and then up a bit.
The lowest notes on the instrument are limited, but one could almost say the sky's the limit when it comes to the high register, depending on the ability of the player.
Bobby Pratt it's always a lead trumpet. If you've got a good lead trumpet, that's the start of a good band. And the saxophones, I don't mean they're secondary, but there's something about a lead trumpet.
Well, that's why it's called the leader of the band.
Yeah, and it was nothing to do with it, but they did have three Scotsmen when I joined the band. Bobby Pratt, Eddie Blair, and Duncan Campbell. And that was comedy in there as well, so the trumpets were really great.
Arranger Johnny Keating with Max Harris on the Iron Man of the trumpet section. But the leader had still more adjustments to make. Every bit as dismaying as the departure of Kenny Baker was the decision of founder member Jack Parnell to form his own band in 1951.
I didn't want to do it, funnily enough. I never really wanted to do that. I really wanted to stay what I was doing, playing the drums. I just loved playing the drums. But I got talked into it by Leslie Gray, Lou's brother. He told me, he said, oh, come on now, you've got a baby now, you've got to take the next step. Talked me into it. But I did tell him who to get. Ronnie.
Ronnie Verrill, who'll make a last non-playing appearance with the Heath Band tomorrow night. He came in after a good temporary replacement, Basil Kirchin.
I got a terrible time with some of the guys in the band when I finally went with Ted. things like, he don't swing like Basil, does he? Can you imagine how I felt? And I said to Ted, look, I said, I'm not popular with the guy, with some of the guys. And he said, who are they? Tell me who they are and I'll sack them. I said, no, no, I can't say that. I just want to go. He said, you will stay. Anyway, I stayed. Gradually, I won the guys over. I did a concert once and did a big drum solo and bought the bloody house down, whatever. Viva Verrill, it was called, that's right. And the main offender came to me and said, oh, you're my little friend now. And after that, I relaxed. I knew I was accepted.
Viva Verrill, the performance that put the band on Ronnie's side. Paul Carpenter, the vocalist compere of the early days, was long gone by now, so Ted had to do his own announcing, even on radio. Some band leaders, like Victor Sylvester, were rather good at this task in a brisk and militaristic sort of way. It wasn't Ted's cup of tea at all, although the band enjoyed it.
The next number is one we also did a few weeks back, so it's more or less a repeat by public demand. The public in this case are Bailey Hall, Charlie Brown, Ernie Benner and Vincent Genovese. I'll start this again. Bailey Hall, Charlie Brown, Ernie Benner and Vincent Genovese of the United States Air Force, stationed in Iama, Turkey.
The funny thing about Ted, apart from his announcements, and this is something I do find hard to explain, is that he seemingly could not sing in tune. He'd been, as we know, a fine trombonist, and the trombone is an instrument on which you find your own notes on the slide, without keys or valves to help you. It follows that all trombonists I know can sing, perhaps not pleasingly, but on the note. With Ted, however...
Mrs. Rowland of 13 Farringdon Lane, Ribbleton, Preston, sent a card which said, I would like you to sing a cowboy song for Peter O'Malley's birthday. Well, I don't make a habit of singing, but we must please the customer, so I'll do my best. Take me back to my booth and saddle. Oh, 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 oh. Funny, you think you could sing better than that?
Well, you would indeed. I don't know how to account for his being so much at sea with a song. As a player, he was now appearing only rarely in his own trombone section.
Yeah. Well, he used to join...
He used to come up for the five trombones. How High the Moon.
Things the like, unison, he the end of How High the Moon.
Well, he was very fussy about the trombone.
Oh, yes, yes.
And more fussy than with any other section.
He stood in front of the trombone. He stood in front of the trombone all night.
Walking up and down. He's just standing in front of the trombones. All the time.
Mm-hmm.
Glaring.
Yeah. Well, he was one of the glaring leaders, was he?
That one where the top B flats.
Obsession.
Was it? And we wouldn't look at him, you see, because one of us maybe would split it, you know. Yeah. Keep your eyes off of me. Because he was looking to see who would split that high B flat.
The high note punctuations on Obsession don't last long, but they have to be cleanly played, as they are here. Obsession owns. Ted's pride in his trombone section can only have been swelled by the arrival in 1952